This week on the Golf Digest podcast, we have an interview with LPGA Hall of Famer Julie Inkster, and we get to some of your pressing reader questions, all coming up next on the Golf Digest podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Golf Digest podcast. We have an excellent episode for you today. I'm Keely Levins here with my boss, Sam Weinman. Hi, Sam.
Thank you for establishing the hierarchy.
I feel like the readers have a right to know.
That's good.
We chatted with Julie Inkster, LPGA Hall of Famer and Solheim Cup captain, and we went through all of your questions, picked out two of them, and we're going to set the record straight for you guys today. If you have any pressing questions about golf or something tangentially related to golf, please call in to 212-286-1812, and maybe they'll be on the next episode. One can only hope.
You should be so lucky. Wait, before we start, we have a quick announcement from our friends at the USGA. You may know the USGA mostly for its 14 annual championships, which are widely considered the ultimate tests in golf, but there's a lot about the USGA you may not know. The USGA works with golf facilities to help them run more efficiently and intelligently while also reducing their reliance on water. Its handicap system helps level the playing field and makes the game more social. And along with the RNA in Scotland, the USGA is modernizing the game's rules and even asking us for feedback that you're invited to share with them anytime online. There's a lot to love about golf, and the greatness of the game brings out the best in all of us. Discover more at usga.org. That concludes the promotional part of today's program.
Excellent. We appreciate it.
That was good. So, okay, so do you want to get to some questions first?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, so the first one is from our friend Tom. I believe he said he's from Pennsylvania. We won't hold that against him.
Hi, Golf Digest. Tom from Pennsylvania here. I was watching the Players this weekend, and it seemed like Poulter blew it playing it safe on 16. He didn't go for it, and it kind of ruined the end of the tournament. You guys have seen a lot of golf, so I was wondering what you guys thought watching that. Thanks a lot.
First of all, I love, in addition to you calling me your boss, that Tom immediately gives some credit to us by saying that we watch a lot of golf, so we're obviously experts.
We are.
Of course. So let's revisit. This was, back up for a second, the Players Championship, always a great event, great golf course, might have been the most boring Players Championship in recent memory.
I would agree.
No disrespect to Siwoo Kim, the champion, but one of the more compelling elements of the tournament was this moment late in the tournament, 16th hole, Ian Poulter was down by two, 228 to the green at the par 5 16th, and lays up, and he got all kinds of heat from it from people on social media, most notably Randall Chamblee and Steve Elkington, neither of whom are shy with their opinions. So it begs the question, was it justified? Did he deserve to be ripped for it, or was he making the prudent play?
I think when you're dealing with Ian Poulter, there's always an element of people are just like looking for a reason to rip on him, which we're not going to talk about if that's justified or not, but whenever he does anything a little bit questionable, people are just like, oh, he's throwing it, like whatever. So I think that's part of the issue here. I think another part of the issue is that it was a very boring Players and people are just like looking for a reason to make it more interesting. I think that's also why this became more of an issue than it really is. But I mean, I disagreed with a lot of it because he was catching a lot for just like throwing the tournament away and for like not playing to win. And he hit one of the most aggressive shots on 18 that you saw the entire day. Like,
First of all, I think it's fair to say if you're talking about a tour player who has a chance to win and has his PGA Tour card safely secured, and he's doing anything but being aggressive and trying to win, maybe he's due some criticism. But here's a guy who's his position on tour is still very tenuous and needs a good showing. And I would argue there's nothing more pressure-filled than playing for a card. I mean, that's the most pressure. Playing to win has one element of pressure, but playing to secure your PGA Tour card is far more. And so this was the smart play. I don't begrudge him at all for laying up. First of all, we're talking about an extremely difficult golf hole where you can make a huge number in a hurry. And so we're talking, 228. It's not like he was you know, a buck 70 away.
Right. Everyone was saying he was so close. He easily, like, he's in the rough, like almost 230 away.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't standing over that ball. Like, I don't know what that lie really looked like. Right. He could have not really had much of an option.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. It's like kind of the mentality of like when your ass is on the line, like you should play like your ass is on the line. And
yeah,
I think that's what he was doing.
Yeah. And you're right. Like what happened on 18 was amazing. By the way, also another really curious sequence real quick, because you did a story about that, which was on 18, hits a possible shank. We're going to call it a push. Right. Into the pine straw, and then was seen on TV clearing all the pine straw. So for all you rules nerds out there, the question was, is that legal? He was clearing the pine straw before he dropped. And the question was he building a stance? And the answer to that was?
It was totally legal.
Right.
Which blew my mind. I thought for sure that he was, like, inappropriately moving. I thought that you would have to drop the ball first, because then the ball's in play. And then you can move loose impediments as much as you want. But he was moving it before. And there's a decision that specifically says, like, before you drop the ball, can you move loose impediments? Yes, you can. Pine straw, loose impediment, no penalty.
Anyway, so unfortunately for the Players' Championship, those were arguably the two most exciting things that happened on Sunday. And neither of them had to do with the person who won the tournament. Again, great player, fantastic performance.
Just especially with his back. Yes. Like, yeah.
He just kind of sucked the air out of it by playing as well as he did, which happens on occasion. Okay, so next question is from a friend in Texas.
Hi there. I saw this debate on Twitter about using the word golfing. And first of all, I think it's the biggest nerd debate of all time. But second of all, I was wondering what Golf Digest take was on this pressing issue. Thanks.
Okay, well, on behalf of nerds everywhere, it's not the most nerdy, because I can go much nerdier than that. So if you think that's if you think that's nerdy, you got another thing coming. So this is a great thing, and those of us who work in the golf business, it's a little bit like nails on a chalkboard when people say golfing, or are you going golfing, or you're a really good golf player. That's my favorite one. God. So I think our official stance, tell me if I'm wrong, is what? Is that you play golf. You're going to play golf. You never go golfing or you don't golf.
I did look this up in the Golf Digest style book.
Yes.
Which is a publication that exists within our office. Yeah. I always thought that was the funniest thing. But yes, officially it says to avoid I golfed today.
Right. However, okay, what I'm going to add to that is we are also coming in at this standpoint is we're trying to be less golf snobby, right? As a whole.
This isn't helping, is it?
You're right. This is not helping. Like, you know, we have people who work on our office, and we're not going to name names, but who have used golfing. And we all, you know, we all flip our nose at them.
Yeah.
And we need to be more welcoming. So if someone wants to say golfing or they're going golfing, we have to be more accepting. So
do we?
Yeah.
Really?
I do.
I mean, I've been cool about the jeans thing. Yeah. I've been cool about the music thing. I don't know if I'm ready to give this up.
Well, let me just be clear about something. When I say being more welcoming, what I mean is that we are definitely free to mock them behind their back.
Oh, thank
you.
Okay.
But to their face, we have to be accepting of the fact they might use golfing as a verb.
That's all I need. That's fine.
Okay. All right, that's fair. Okay, good. So that concludes the questions. Again, give it the number one more time, Keely. So
the number is 212-286-1812.
That's not the number you read first time around.
Yeah, it is.
Was it? All right. Make sure it's 212-286-1812.
Yeah.
And now you spoke with
Julie Inkster,
Hall of Famer,
she's
LPGA
amazing.
Legend, right?
And she's still playing on the LPGA,
I know.
And like playing well. She's
one of the,
crazy.
One of the best tournaments I ever covered, maybe the best tournament I ever covered, was her winning the 2002 U.S. Women's Open at Prairie Dunes. She came from behind to beat Annika, which was killer.
Unheard of. Yeah.
And the best thing about it was, just to speak to where the LPGA is she wins. I mean, I think she shot something mid-60s that day. Was a celebration of all of Kansas. And then I saw her waiting on the security line the next morning, you know, half asleep, for just like everyone else, because that's the life that an LPGA player lives. So, but yeah, great player, and I'm looking forward to listening to your interview.
Welcome to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Keely Levins, and I am joined today by Julie Inkster. She's been playing on the LPGA Tour since 83. She's won 44 professional tournaments, 7 majors, member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, Solheim Cup captain, and she commentates for Fox. So quite possibly the busiest woman in golf. How's it going, Julie?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Thanks for coming on. So can we just talk about your schedule right now? Like, how are you balancing playing on tour, captaining, working for Fox? How's that all going?
Well, it's right now it's kind of really picking up. You know, it's I'm in Des Moines today. I'm going to be in Mexico City tomorrow. So the travel's picking up a little bit. You know, we're about a little over 100 days out from the Solheim Cup. So that's taking some time right now, just trying to get that organized. You know, I'm trying to play a little bit, but I won't be playing much much more because I'll be starting my Fox stuff in June. So it's busy, but you know, I've kind of been used to being busy and used to multitasking, you know, traveling with kids on tour. So so it's all good.
Awesome. There's still a bit of time before Solheim Cup selections, but how are you feeling about the U.S. team this year?
Oh, I think they're playing great. It's good to see, especially, you know, like my top five are playing really well. And then we got some, you know, Nelly Korda's been playing good. Beth Allen's been playing good. Austin Ernst's been playing good. And then you throw in the regulars. It's been good. I mean, you know, we got a couple ones that haven't turned it on yet. Paul and Morgan have struggled a little bit, but they still have plenty of time. And so it's just, you know, I've been on their side. It's just hectic. It's, you know, you're trying really hard, and sometimes that's hard to do.
Yeah, certainly. Do you feel like you're going into this Solheim Cup having already captained 2 years ago? Does it make it a little easier, a little less daunting?
Well, yeah, but you know, also, you know, you want to try to stay sharp and not get lazy. So, you know, I've been kind of doing my due diligence and staying up with Chris about what needs to be done when and when I need to get this done, and he's been kind of keeping me on a good schedule.
With the Ryder Cup, I feel like there's so much conversation about compatibility between players, and you know, a lot of the European success seems to have been because they all, you know, they work together really well. Is that something that you think about when you're selecting your team and partnering your players?
Well, yeah, I think that's a little bit falseness. I mean, especially on the LPGA, because the LPGA players, they mostly play over here. And it's not like they pal around over in Europe and play travel together. You know, over here, they mostly play over here. So they're kind of in the same boat we are. You know, it's hard to get 12 players, individuals, to come together for a week. But I really thought we did a really good job in Germany of everybody in the time, whether we won or lost, just being there for each other. And that's pretty much what we want this year. It's just, you know, have fun and go out there and play some golf.
Yeah, the team unity definitely seemed to be at a all-time high 2 years ago. It was, and it was obviously too bad to see it come sort of through the unfortunate call with Allison Lee and Suzanne Pedersen. Do you think there's still any kind of bad blood left over from that? It was obviously a long time ago, but as you go into this event again, do you think that there's any remnants of that?
Well, I mean, we're not going to bring it up, so
good.
it's done. It's in the past. So you know, we're moving on. You know, I'm hoping that this is just a nice, good rivalry with no issues, and we see a lot of great golf, because I think it's a huge event for women's golf, and I think it really promotes it well.
I agree completely. And it should be, like, from everything I've heard, Des Moines is going to be like a really big crowd, energetic. Is that the sense that you're getting?
Yes, that's the sense I'm getting, total.
Cool. I'm curious as to what you've seen in young players over the years, since you have been on tour for quite a while, just kind of watching the evolution of young players as they come up on the LPGA tour. It seems like there's an especially strong young contingent right now. Why do you think that is?
Well, because, you know, these kids have been playing since they're, you know, competitively, like 12, 13, you know, they play in the, especially our Asian contingent and our European contingent. I mean, all these girls have been traveling around the world since they're 13, 14, 15 years old, and they've competed against the best players in the world. So when they do turn pro, they're ready to go and they're ready to win. I mean, the first time I ever played out of California was I was 18. So it's different. It's golf is, you know, it's like I played every sport. You know, now everybody just plays one sport. You know, they specialize in one sport. You're not allowed to play two sports or three sports. And they're strong. They hit the ball a long way. They've got great touch. And they're good players.
Do you think that the singular focus on golf I find interesting? Because I'm sure that there was some benefit to your game having been exposed to other sports. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a right or wrong. I don't think you're going to see a lot of these girls play into their 30s. That's for sure. You know, I think they're going to be done when they're, you know, probably 30, you know, 31 at the most, because they've just, you know, played golf for so long and it's been all they've done that I think they're going to one day say, I want to try something else, you know?
Yeah, and we've certainly heard Lydia Ko, the number one player in the world, say that several times, that she sees herself retiring at 30, which, you know, is not something you want to hear as a fan, you know? You want to see her play forever.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but, you know, it's different. I mean, these girls have been playing 26 to 28 tournaments or more, maybe as a junior, for a long time. And it not only wears on you mentally, but it also wears on you physically. You know, a lot of them go in those trailers or physical therapy trailer every day. And, you know, it's just that their body didn't really fully develop when they were just beating on those balls and, you know, stuff started breaking down.
So your like longevity on the tour, do you think is in part that you didn't focus solely on golf at a really young age?
Well, probably. And, you know, I've got a couple kids and, you know, it wasn't really my number one priority. You know, I've always had a real passion for it. And I think when I first started out, you know, I never played more than four in a row, and I maybe did that once a year. I played Wow. 2 to 3 in a row and took two weeks off, and I wasn't a real play every tournament, and I think that helped too.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like there's going to be less and less of that, even on the PGA Tour as well, as the off season
Yeah.
continues to dwindle. Well, Julie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. And we wish you and the U.S. team lots of luck at the Solheim Cup. And
yeah,
good luck in your
great.
Yeah, it will be. Good luck in your tournaments coming up, too.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks again to Julie Ingster for joining us. And thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to us on iTunes and check back next week to see who our guest is.